Since 2011, American Giant has been making everyday clothing with extraordinary effort. Not in far-off factories, but right here in the USA. We obsess over fabrics, fit, and details, because if you're going to wear it every day, it should feel great and last for years. From the cut of a hoodie to the finishing of a seam, nothing is overlooked. Our supply chain is tight-knit and local, which means less crisscrossing the country and more care in every step. The result is durable clothing, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatpants, and denim that become part of your life season after season. This isn't fast fashion, it's clothing made with purpose by people who care as much about how it's made as how it fits. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hi, welcome to Picayune Conversations. This is Calvin talking to you again. I'm running solo again today. I want to talk today just a little bit about couples relationships and an aspect of something that happens often in conflict. And I want to make clear that this problem that we're going to discuss, I think in many ways my profession, and I will include myself as, you know, part of the responsible group here, we're responsible for this problem. I think that very understandably, there is this difficulty that people have when approaching how do we have conflict as a couple. And rightfully so. We people in my profession, myself included, have focused a lot on how it is that we express things. If you know, if you're a therapist, you probably have heard in couples counseling workshops or trainings things about softening our approach. Let's just stick with that for a second. Softening approaches, you know, and focusing on tone of voice and how we communicate things and how do we use attuned language and all this. By the way, I am in favor of all these things. I am by no means saying that we need harder, approaches or bids for connection. Soft approaches are lovely and wonderful. But here's, I think, where it gets a little wonky. Is that I think that sometimes there is such an emphasis on saying things the right way that what we do is we offer people an excuse to not pay attention to what is being said. Meaning, okay, our partner or our spouse comes to us and they have a complaint of some kind. And yet, let's say that they are not particularly soft about it. Let's put out of view something like verbal abuse, where it is just so aggressive and demeaning and insulting. Let's put that to the side, okay? And let's say that without being insulting, demeaning, aggressive, violent, nothing like that, it's really harsh how they come at us. Their voice is a little bit raised. Again, maybe they're not screaming at us, but their volume is a little bit high. They are using you statements. They are not attuned. They are not particularly regulated. They're you know, whatever, okay? But they're bringing to us a complaint. Well, here's something that people in my profession have inadvertently, or I don't know, maybe on purpose, trained people to do, and that is to ignore everything that is being said by that person until they say it in just the right way. And here's where I think this is really a problem, okay, is that when we focus so much on on the way in which things are being said, we create an incredibly high bar for entry to be heard and to be understood within the context of a relationship. And this is anti-intimacy. Also, you know, often these ideas of softening approaches and things, they come up a lot in attachment-based research, which is, again, like, I am a huge fan of attachment-based research. No problem there. Love this stuff. It's fantastic. But here's, I think, I want us to think about attachment for a second. And I want us to think about, often when we're talking about attachment, we think about between a parent and a young child, often a mother and a young child. And I want us to recognize something, that young children do not do a good job of softening approaches. Okay, just straight out of the womb, the only tool that they have is screaming bloody murder. They literally will torture you, okay, with the sounds that they make. They will torture you until you attend to them. They're not soft in their approaches. They throw tantrums. They throw themselves on the floor. They kick. They scream. They accuse you of things. You're ruining my life. You know, on and on and on. And we recognize that as a parent, we still have a responsibility not to nitpick the way in which they are expressing these things, but to attune to and be responsive and hear and understand what is going on in what they're expressing. Now, I am not suggesting by any means that we should expect a 35-year-old partner to have the articulation skills of an infant. Of course, it is reasonable to expect a little bit more regulation and articulation and maturity from a 35-year-old partner. Of course, that is true. But there's still a principle nestled inside of here, which is this. You can still attune to somebody who is approaching you not softly. And so oftentimes what I see happening in couples relationships, and this would be as true in mine as anybody's, or, you know, my friendships, my business partnerships, intimate relationships, all these kinds of things, there is this tendency to, it's almost as though we do what Terry Real calls utilizing the language of recovery in service of our pathology. And here's what I mean by that, is that we know that always and never are not particularly helpful in problem solving in a couple's relationship. We understand that you statements are less preferable than I statements. We understand that using a lower tone of voice is better. Again, agree with all of this. But then we weaponize those things and take that knowledge and turn it into a shield in which we say, I don't have to listen to you because you're not saying it the right way. Whatever it is that you are trying to communicate to me, I don't have to pay attention to it at all. I don't have to attend to it. I can just plug my ears and act as though I can't hear you until you meet my standard for saying this the right way. Listen, there's a level to which we all do this. I think particularly in a highly therapized culture, this is a very common thing, and I think we need to take some responsibility for it. To go back to Terry Real for a moment, Terry Real, I think he said something really challenging. I wish I could point you in the specific direction of the video or audio where I heard him say this, but he is just talking about his interactions with his wife, and just speaking for himself, okay, and this is part of what I like about Terry Real and his work. If, by the way, if you don't know about Terry Real, he's got amazing stuff out there on couples relationships. I would highly recommend. Honestly, I find a lot of kind of celebrity-ish couples therapists pretty insufferable, very jargony. I think it's sometimes very impractical, the things that they share, and oftentimes they're just sharing what's worked for them as opposed to really getting down to the core of how people work. And Terry Real, I have a great deal of confidence and affection for his work, so would highly recommend his stuff. But he's talking about his relationship with his wife and noticing that he was doing this, where he would focus so much on what she was saying that he would not pay attention, or focus so much on how she was saying something that he would ignore what she was saying to him. And again, this is not an either-or question, okay? I'm not saying that we need to abandon all efforts to improve the way in which we communicate things. Of course we need to work on that. Tone of voice does matter. Regulation does matter. I statements are preferable to you statements, etc. But if you have a partner who is not doing a particularly good job of doing that, this does not excuse you of the responsibility to hear and understand them. It just doesn't. And there is something that they are trying to communicate to you in their complaint. Maybe it is reasonable, maybe it is unreasonable, maybe it is based on misinformation or a miscommunication or whatever else. But there is something going on in them that does need to be attended to and needs to be heard out. And if the way in which you interact with that is to say, well, you're not tall enough to ride the ride of me understanding you because you haven't used the right language and the right tone of voice and the right whatever, this is a barrier to intimacy. This is a barrier to attachment. This is a barrier to the process of repair and healing from disrepair. And so I really would want to challenge all of us when we are in relationships. I know I'm talking about this within the context of couples, but this would be true in other relationships as well, friendships, even more, you know, professional or formal relationships. It is really, really important that we have some way of peeking through the tone of voice, peeking through the dysfunction in how a person is communicating something to us in order to see what is it that they are trying to tell me. Is there something true about what they're bringing to me? Is there something that does need to be attended to in their complaint? The answer to that question is almost always going to be yes. I'm even struggling to think of an exception to that, but I'm open to the possibility that there might be one out there. Generally, though, there is something that needs to be attended to and heard and listened to. Is this fair? Not really. It's not really fair for the burden of understanding to fall on somebody who is being communicated to in a relatively ineffective and unhealthy way. I'm not saying that that's fair. I am saying that to obsess over fairness in a relationship is a recipe for disaster. It is a recipe for resentment, for rigid, impermeable, I hesitate to call them boundaries because they're really not boundaries. It's just walls between people. It leads to a great deal of discouragement because there's this feeling of you have to say it exactly the right way in order to be heard. And so there's not a lot of room for imperfection. There's a lot that is damaging about this way of thinking about communication when it comes to relationships. And so I think there's a level to which there's a lot of balance to be had in things. And we have been so obsessed with identifying, well, this is the right way to say things and this is the helpful way to say things. And I was even laughing with a client earlier this week about how therapists, we do this thing in couple sessions where we break it down. We're like, well, you know, I'm wondering what it would be like for you to say it this way, you know, to say, right now I'm feeling really scared. And when you did this, I felt so vulnerable. And it reminded me of when my father used to put me down. And so I got, you know, into fight or flight mode and I withdrew into my, you know, turtle shell or whatever. And we go on this very, you know, by the way, accurate monologue about, you know, here's the right way to say it. And it's all vulnerable. And it's, of course, very beautifully articulated and clear and with nice tight metaphors and all of our therapeutic jargon sprinkled in there. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with it. And if a client can you know, mimic that or you know, take that and carry it and follow through on that, great. The reality is that that's really not how people talk. It's just not. And could we think of it as a kind of aspirational ideal that we could move toward and strive toward? Absolutely. And I also think it is really unreasonable to expect people to, especially just lay people, these are untrained people with different personalities than therapists, whatever, to walk around talking in this kind of, you know, highly regulated, cool as a cucumber, therapeutic, jargon-laced way with their partner, particularly when they are hurting and when they are upset. This is a really unreasonable thing to expect of people. It's unreasonable for therapists to expect this of their clients. It is unreasonable for partners to expect this of their partners, spouses to expect this of their spouse, business partners to expect this of their business partner, friends to expect this of their friends. It doesn't mean that there's not room to improve or that there's anything particularly wrong with the therapeutic jargon, but we also need to be reasonable. We also need to create a level of room for imperfection and for dysregulation. I'll even just say this, that I resent the idea that there is something fundamentally wrong with criticism in a relationship. And I think that there are folks in my field who sometimes at least give that impression. Maybe they don't actually think that, but they sometimes give this impression to clients, right? Where it's like, well, I felt criticized, and so they were criticizing, and that's off limits. We're not allowed to criticize. You have to be able to criticize. You have to be able to complain in a relationship. Now, the extent to which you do that, okay, that's important and something really to consider. You can't be nitpicking every little thing. You're going to create a lot of discouragement. But the reality is that there are problems in a relationship. If you are in a relationship of any kind, friendship, business partnership, intimate relationship, the reality is that you're screwing up somehow. Okay, and maybe it's very, very small in a way that really doesn't ever need to be addressed. But maybe it's in a less small way that really does need to get addressed, because if you don't address it, it's going to end up damaging the relationship. And so there has to be room for complaint and criticism in a relationship. And I think there also has to be room for those things to happen without incessant nitpicking and criticism about how the criticism was made. Well, you didn't. Yeah, you have a right to lodge a complaint, but you have to do it in exactly this right way or it doesn't count, and I don't have to listen and I don't have to respond and I don't have to take it seriously. I will only take you seriously if you measure up in this kind of way. This is a really profoundly unhealthy thing that happens in a very therapized culture, and I think something we need to, we just need to create a little counter pressure, okay? We don't have to throw out therapeutic language or softened approaches or anything like that, but we need to create a little counter pressure so there is room for this. In my little subculture of Adlerian psychology, we have this phrase that we are constantly talking about the courage to be imperfect, the courage to be imperfect, the courage to be imperfect. And I really appreciate this idea that we do need this courage to recognize our own imperfections and recognize that we're okay even though we are not perfect. We have things to improve upon. We're not going to do great all the time, and that's all right. I really love this idea. I think where often we struggle in the Adlerian world and then also outside of the Adlerian psychology world, we struggle to have courage to tolerate other people's imperfections. It's like, okay, I've got all the courage in the world to be imperfect for me, but how dare anyone else be imperfect? That is petulance. That's what that is. And the reality is that we share the world with other people who are not always regulated, who are not always going to use therapeutic jargon, who are not always going to be properly attuned to what's going on in us, who are not always going to be very understanding, who are not always going to use softened approaches when they have a very reasonable complaint or an unreasonable complaint to make about us. And it's not that we have to tolerate that in a way where we just like, okay, we don't have to deal with it, or we don't need to work on improving that, or I can't lodge a complaint about how loudly they're speaking at me, or ask them to soften their approach. But also, I can't walk around acting as if I really only ever have the responsibility to listen to, care, and understand other people if they are communicating to me in the way that I want them to communicate to me. This is really, really unreasonable, puts up incredible boundaries, but barriers between us and other people. Not boundaries, barriers between us and other people, and something that we really do need to work on. So I hope this little bit of thinking has been helpful for you. This is something that's been coming up in some of my sessions lately, and so I thought I would share it with everybody so that, I don't know, it's something we can all chew on together and work on together imperfectly, as other people are working on it imperfectly too. So I hope this has been helpful. Stay tuned. Our episodes this season, I don't think, are coming out quite as regularly and predictably as we would like, but do stick with us. We're going to keep putting out more content, more things for you guys to listen to and think about and chew on and hopefully apply in your own life. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com. You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.